40 Days of Wisdom. Here we go. Thank you. They figured for this series there ought to be someone with gray. And so they picked me. There's all kinds of different, you know, milestones in life that hopefully give you some wisdom along the way. But one of those for me was a big deal is when I turned 16. What happens when you turn 16? Driver's license. Yeah. I woke up early at the DMV at my town. It opened at 8 a.m. I jumped in the car, drove myself there. I've been driving for a couple of years, so it wasn't a big deal. Got to the DMV, and they make you take a test, right? They want to make sure you have some competence. The bar's pretty low, as we know. A lot of licensed drivers out there are like, wow, really? Apparently, they were giving them out at the bumper cars at Disneyland that day. But I went, took the test, and now I'm legal. All right, this was like, yeah, freedom. This is awesome. The problem is it's a life and death deal, cars. Because it's a couple tons, it's got an engine and a gas pedal, and a 16-year-old behind the wheel where all the receptor sites in the brain haven't connected yet. This is a dangerous life or death deal, kind of a milestone event. But be careful with it. When I was 13, I had another one of those. I wanted to go and get a new shotgun to go hunting with my friends. And, you know, that wasn't unusual in my town where you'd be riding your Stingray, carrying a shotgun down to the river to go duck hunting. Nobody even thought anything of it. Nobody went, oh my gosh, we better call the police. They said, good luck, man. And you went hunting. The problem is I went to go pick up the shotgun. You know what they made me do? I had to take a hunter safety course. I'm 13. What could go wrong? What they wanted to teach you is, you know, if you're carrying a loaded shotgun, you don't want to be talking with your hands. You know, things like that. Just, you know, really good stuff. Why? It's a life or death deal. It's really important. What I want to talk about today is kind of a life or death deal too, although you might not think of it that way, but it is life-giving or life-draining. The words that we use and the tone that we use when we talk to each other. It's hugely important because we set an atmosphere for our lives by how we communicate. We all do it, whether it's someone that you are familiar with or just someone that you're doing business with throughout the day, just random encounters. How we talk has a tremendous impact on the atmosphere that we are creating for the life that we want to live. What kind of atmosphere do you want to create? What kind of atmosphere do you want to live in? Oh, but you don't understand, Mike. It's the other people in my life that talk this way, and they're the ones that are creating. You know, well, there's certainly some truth to that. What's your part? When they amp up, do you amp up? When they amp up, do you shut down? You see, you don't have to let them determine your attitude. What are you going to do with the atmosphere that you're creating where you live? Well, everyone is issued one of these mouths when they're born. And there's no Department of Motor Mouths to monitor this. You don't take a test to make sure that you are able to use this weapon properly. And so you end up doing a lot of damage. Or damage is done to you in this process. Now, it's God's desire that we experience abundant life. And the tongue is a life or death deal in this process, every one of us. When my wife Carmen said, what are you talking about this weekend? I said, well, I'm talking about using our words wisely and being careful with how we speak. And she gave me this. I said, what? Just saying. You see, I'm a fellow struggler here, folks, okay? I am. I just admit it to you. I struggle with this from time to time, and I've got to watch it, and it can be difficult at times. For example, I don't really like to talk on the phone. You know, having long conversations on the phone is just like whatever. So let's just make up a story. Say my wife calls me. I'm in the middle of something, and she says, hi, how you doing? Good. Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, check in. How's everything? Yeah, fine. It's like, let's go. She goes, oh yeah, I went out to lunch with my friend, and she goes, I had the most fabulous salad. And it's like, you're killing me here, okay? And, you know, so I'm not really creating an atmosphere of, hey, baby, what's going on? Good to talk to you. I'm so glad you called. No, it's like, get through it. Let's move. This is nothing. You know, you got anything here? What? Let's move this conversation along. So I'm just making this up, but so I might hear something like, you know, if you don't have time for my call, just don't pick up the phone. I don't want to feel like I'm just an interruption in your day. I mean, that might happen if that ever occurred. See, I'm setting an atmosphere as a fellow struggler. This first verse on your outline, let's read this out loud. Outside voices out on the patio, we want to hear you through the wall. If you're online with us, if you're in Starbucks alone, you may not be allowed back, but go ahead. Let's do this together. Ready? Go. The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And those who care for it will have some sweet atmosphere in their life. It's powerful. When we're careless with our words, we can do a lot of damage. We can crush someone's spirit. We can step on someone's dream. We can cause people great resentment in their hearts that can last for years. We can even cause the people we care about to be afraid of us by our words and our tone. We're setting an atmosphere. But when we say the right words at the right time, we can help someone who is lonely feel connected and loved. When we say the right words at the right time, we can help someone who's about to make a big mistake gain some wisdom and change their course. When we use the right words at the right time, we can change the atmosphere. We can cause people who are ready to give up to get hope. It's powerful, this tool that we have. They really are life and death. Proverbs is filled with examples of how to be word wise. I want to look at six of them with you. If you're taking notes, jot this down. First of all, be slow. This is not an IQ issue. Being slow in your response time. Now, I tend to process my thoughts by talking. Anybody else would say, yeah, I tend to, you know, think things through, and I talk, and I say them. Anybody else? You liars. I know some of you didn't lift your hand, and you definitely do that. That can be a problem. That can be a problem, because sometimes you're just processing random thoughts, and it isn't because you really think that this is what you're going to go do, or this is what you think. It's just kind of coming out. You're just processing it. Other people, they process it internally. And they think we're idiots because we just say all this stuff. I will admit, those of you who process internally, you're going to probably have a little bit more of an atmosphere around you naturally. Those of us that process verbally, we got a little more challenge in this. Proverbs 29 says, "Do you see someone who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for Mike." Put your own name in there wherever appropriate today. Because the idea of any communication that you have is fraught with problems, misunderstandings, just saying things off the cuff. Well, you know, I just speak my mind. Well, you're an idiot. Okay, sometimes you need to rein it in. Think about it. Be slow. And if you are ever in a situation where there's more than one or two people, it can really hurt, because I've been doing this for 40 years. And, you know, sometimes I have these thoughts, these shiny things that go by and I say them. They're not written down. I shouldn't have said them. It happens all the time. I have made some huge blunders while speaking on a Sunday. I mean, really bad stuff. So I want to tell you four times that other people made those mistakes. Not me. Friends of mine. There's one passage where Abraham is referring to his nephew Lot, and they're kind of dividing up where they're going to, where their farms are going to be, right? And so it says that Lot made his encampment outside the city of Sodom, evil town, right? Well, my friend was a Pentecostal preacher, and he was preaching. He's closing his message on a Sunday morning, and he said the words a little wrong, and he said, and Lot pinched his tits towards Sodom. Pitched his tents. The place came undone. And he just said, you know, let's just leave it there and I'll try better next week, you know, and dismissed the service. Couldn't get it back. I was on a staff at a church and the senior pastor was getting pretty passionate. And he said at a tender moment, Jesus came to reveal the fart of the father. What? Heart of the father. It can happen. Just gets twisted around, you know. Another friend of mine, he's speaking about John the Baptist, and three times, without realizing he was doing it, he said, John the bastard. And his wife sitting in the front row, and finally, in the third one, she's like, and he goes, what are you trying to tell me? He's just in a rough voice. She goes, you've said John the bastard three times. You know, you're going to talk to me like that, you're going to get it full on. Oh, thank you, honey. Oops. Yeah. So it can happen. Happens to a lot of people who are speaking. One last one. Again, I was in this service and came time where the pastor decided he was going to invite people to open their hearts to Jesus. So he said, you know, close your eyes, bow your heads. If you want to receive Jesus, I just want you to look up at me, lift your hand, and I just want to recognize that you're making that choice. So people are doing that. Are you receiving Jesus? Yeah. Are you opening your heart to Jesus? Yeah. Are you receiving Jimmy? Jimmy? Is that Jesus' little brother? No, I wanted Jesus. I mean, they might have gone through their whole Christian life not really knowing if they had Jimmy or Jesus this whole time. Wise people recognize the challenge of communication and that it's huge. And when the subject gets sensitive or tense, people need to be word wise. And then be humble. And that pause, being slow, it'll lead you to some humility. The wise person prays for help before he opens his mouth. It's like if you know you're going into a difficult one, stop, pray. Here's why. James 1 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Ask. It's a simple thing. Don't go into the conversation thinking that you've got it all together and that you're immune from creating a misunderstanding. Be careful. There's a great example of this in the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is an Israeli exile in Babylon. He has risen to a position within the king's court, and he finds out that this remnant that's remained in Israel is in really bad shape, and the city of Jerusalem is destroyed, and it's just weighing heavily on him. And as he's going into the king, he just isn't hiding it well. The problem is that it's a capital offense to be sad in front of the king. You can die for that. And he's an exile. And so at one point, the king sees it. Here's what he says. The king said to me, what is it you want? And then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king. Essentially, he saw Nehemiah, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? And they weren't married, so he didn't say, nothing. It's a shiny thing there. He prayed before he answered. He stopped. He thought. He asked God for help. Life and death rested on what he said next. It was hugely important. If you pray first and speak second, you'll say something like, God, help me to be clear. Help me to be kind. Help me to communicate this in a way that is life-giving. Now, if you speak and then you'll pray, your prayer might make a little more like, oh God, why did I say that? You will pray. I suggest you pray first, not second. I walked into a conversation as a new Christian. I was 18 years old, and I heard a sermon where this tax collector has Jesus over, and he says, I'm gonna repay everything I've taken. And I'm sitting there listening to this, and I realized, well, you know, I worked as a bellboy at the Holiday Inn, and I had been stealing towels and sheets and pillowcases, giving to my friends. Everyone was drying off on a Holiday Inn towel. And I realized, you know, I've stolen this stuff. So Jesus, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. No more. I won't be stealing anything like that. No. And kind of felt like, well, you know, maybe need to go and take care of this with the boss. And I was like, no, we don't want to do that. Silly Jesus, you know. But I just continued to feel like that's what I needed to do. And so, you know, I go in and I'm asked to speak with the manager, Tex Hager. He was the local boxing promoter as well. He stood about 5'6" in every way. You know, he was just this. His nose was like all over his face from way too many fights. And he always had a cigar. This was, you know, secondhand smoke was considered healthy. And he's in front of the desk and, you know, cigar going back and forth. What do you want? I said, Mr. Hager, I want you to know that a few months ago, I opened my heart to Jesus, and I'm a Christian now, and I'm trying to warm up this conversation a little bit. He goes, why the hell do I care? Well, you know, I just need to tell you that I've been stealing some towels and sheets and pillowcases and giving them to my friends, and I'm sorry I did that, and it was wrong, and I realize it now, and it won't happen again. And there was silence. And just the cigar, you know, back and forth. And finally I said, well, do you want them back? He goes, no, not after you and your dirty hippie friends have been using them. I said, okay, more silence. I said, well, am I fired? He goes, hell no, you're probably the only one I can trust around here now. And I got a promotion. Yeah. Now, if you've been stealing on your job and you're going to take this talk and say, well, I know what I need to do now, you're on your own, okay? I don't want to hear about how you don't got a job anymore and it's my fault, all right? You do what you need to do. It's on you, though, from this point forward. So be humble and then be quiet. If you want people to think that you're smart this week, shut up. Shut up. Proverbs 17. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. Sometimes being word wise involves recognizing when you're not really invited into the conversation. And understanding then when you are as well. Sometimes you think you have to jump in when really you haven't been invited to jump in. Stay out of it. Jot this verse down. It's Proverbs 26:17. It says, like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears is someone who rushes into a quarrel not their own. Now, that's a pretty good picture. You know, dogs were not like pets there. Okay, they're more like jackals. So they, you know, grabbing one by the ears means you're going to get bit. And you jump into somebody else's fight, and you'll get bit. You will get bit in the process. Be careful. My brother Steve in grade school, he had a paper out Sunday morning. He comes home, and he's just a mess. He's got blood running down one arm. What happened? He says, well, there was this cat in an alley, and he had a rat trapped, and I decided to save the rat. Rat just chewed him up. He went like this, and it jumped on his arm. And just he wasn't the brightest light in the room at that point, you know. You don't jump in uninvited. Be careful. And when people do come to you, you can make the choice to either be a lightning rod where you ground it and diffuse that conversation, or you can take their invitation to join their side of the argument and grab the cattle prod and go and see who else you can stir up. Be a lightning rod, not a cattle prod. Proverbs 11, it is foolish to belittle one's neighbor. A sensible person keeps quiet. You don't have to go around fixing everything, fixing everyone. All you middle children, just, you know, I know you need to make peace with everybody and make sure everyone loves each other. Just chill. Take your Prozac and back off, okay? And then be teachable. Be teachable. Are you willing to maybe hear some things that are difficult, that are hard at times? Proverbs 27:6, wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Wounds from a sincere friend. Someone who's saying truth to you that can be hard to hear at times. In my 20s, I led a group of people from the church I was at to Israel. And we had a great trip. We were exhausted when we got through the end of it. We're getting on a plane in Tel Aviv to make the awful flight across the pond. And I get on, and the stewardess looks at my ticket and then says, oh, you're the tour director? I said, well, yeah. She goes, oh, and leads me to a seat in business class. I got, like, beds. I said, this is awesome. And so, you know, we get up to elevation, and I kind of go back to that curtain, you know, where the little people are. And I open up, and I see a couple of my friends, and I'm like, close the curtains, go back to bed. Well, about a month later, one of my friends, Dave's, he was older than me, really respected him as a businessman and a Jesus follower. And he said, hey, let's go to lunch. And we did. And he said, man, that trip to Israel was great. He said, yeah, and you know when you got bumped up to business class? He said, yeah. He said, you know, we were all tired. And you really dropped the leadership ball when you took that move, when you made yourself comfortable. That sucked. I hated that. He was so right. And here's a guy who was older than me, had great experience, and he was filling a gap in my life that I had never been taught. And it was a hard lesson, but an important one. And I learned some things, like never travel with Dave. That'd be one. No, I'm so grateful that he cared enough about me to talk to me and not three other people who would agree with him that I'm a jerk. Be teachable. Then be truthful. You know, don't just tell people what you think they want to hear. Sometimes you need to tell the truth. I mean, that there's a lot of people that just are told what they want to hear, which is why they go on shows like American Idol. Somebody need to say, you can't sing. But my grandmother says it's beautiful. She's got hearing aids, man. She's turning them down when you're singing. Sometimes you just need to, you know, be truthful with people. That's why the last words of an Arkansas redneck are, hold my beer and watch this. You know, somebody needed to say, no, you're an idiot. Proverbs 26:28, a lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Our words are important. A whole other category of speech involves the way that we talk to each other. Proverbs 18, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the inmost parts. I heard, did you know? Well, I can't believe that she said that. And you know, she's done that before. And did you realize that he, and you know, it just goes and goes and goes. Gossip can be true, but not necessary. It can be true, but not helpful. And ultimately, it's destructive. But it's so good and juicy. It's so, to have the inside info. We're all susceptible to it. Don't be a safe person to gossip to. Half the problem is the listener. But what if you're hearing the gossip and you say, well, have you talked to them about this? No. Well, then why are you talking to me? You're just gossiping. You know what eventually will happen? No one will gossip to you. Oh, I'd hate to miss out on all the information. Yeah, you're half the problem. Stop being safe. I had one point a staff person come in and was really angry at another staff person. And here's what happened, and I just don't feel, you know, and just wanted me as the senior pastor to know what someone else had done. I said, well, have you talked to him? No. So I grabbed the phone and said, well, let's get him in here. And eyes got real big. Oh, no, we don't want to do this. Well, why are you talking to me then if you haven't talked to them? Well, I just thought you should know. No, you just thought that you wanted to throw them under the bus. But I'm only hearing one side of it. So should I bring them in, or do you want to just say, no, Mike, I'll go to them myself and we'll have a conversation. Which do you want to do? I said, yeah, just please put the phone down. Okay. But I'm going to talk with them next week about how your conversation went. Totally unsafe to gossip to. Our membership covenant has one little phrase in it that when you become a member, you say, I will refuse to gossip. That's important. Well, I'm a member and I never gossip during the worship service. You know, you might want to extend that just a little bit. See, gossip can end friendships. It can splinter families, shatter reputations, and divide churches. It's important. Be truthful as long as it's helpful. And then finally, be healing. Be healing. Consider what you're saying. Would it be okay if the person was standing behind you listening to what you were saying? Would you still say it? I got an email from someone. There was like three people on this email, and some statements were made. And one of the other people on the email emailed me and said, this is a bunch of crap. And I mean, and just went off and then hit send and didn't realize it was reply all. That was fun. Jesus knew that we would have these problems, and he told us why it happens, Matthew 12. From the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. So if I've got a mouth problem, perhaps I've really got a heart problem. That there's some pain, resentment, anger, there's stuff in there, and the symptom is what I say and how I say it. And the real issue is my heart. Jesus is in the business of healing and transforming hearts. And if you open yourself and are honest with yourself, he can begin to do a work of healing, and it'll change the atmosphere of your life. The atmosphere that you really want to live in. An atmosphere of peace. An atmosphere of joy. An atmosphere of encouragement. These are all things that we want. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh text, tweet, or Facebook post stirs up anger. I mean, this is so counterintuitive to where our culture is at right now. What I'm saying is not popular, but it's true. and it's life-giving. And you realize there are a lot of people out there tweeting and texting and posting that are stirring up all kinds of anger. And we want to jump in and go, like, yeah, you go. Just back off. Proverbs 15:4, the soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. There's creative power in our words and our tone. See, God spoke and creation began. It was words. We are created in the image and likeness of our Creator and likewise have the ability to create an atmosphere. What are you creating? What are you creating on your job? Oh, yeah, but I'm just a worker. I don't have any influence on my job. Yes, you do. Maybe you're the boss. What kind of atmosphere are you creating with your words and your tone? You can make a huge difference. Authors Ken Blanchard and Barbara Glanz tell a story in one of their books that Barbara was doing a conference for frontline workers of a large grocery store chain. There were 3,000 people that she was speaking to, checkers, baggers, all the people that work behind the counters at a grocery store. And she talked about creating an atmosphere in their store that drew people in. She talked about creating moments and memories by your words and your attitude. And about a month after that talk, she got a phone call from a 19-year-old bagger named Johnny. And he proudly stated that he was a Down syndrome individual. And here's one of the things he said to her. He said, I liked what you talked about, but at first I didn't think I could do anything special. After all, I'm just a bagger. Then I had an idea. Every night after work, I'd come home and find a thought for the day. If I can't find a saying I like, I just think one up. And then Johnny would have his dad help him, and they would get on the computer and put this thought for the day several times on sheets of paper, and he would cut them up and sign the back until he had 300 ready for his next day of work. And then he said this, when I finish bagging someone's groceries, I put my thought for the day in their bag and say, thanks for shopping with us. It was his step of encouragement, right? Well, a month later, the store manager calls her up and says, I understand that Johnny called you, and I got to tell you a follow-up on that. He says, I was walking through the store, and there is a line at the checkout down to the freezer section. I called up more checkers and went into the line and said, here, we can help you quicker, and nobody would move. He said, no, we want to stay in Johnny's line. They wanted their thought for the day. About a month after that, the manager called again. Give him another update. He said this, Johnny has transformed our store. Now, when the floor department has a broken flower, instead of throwing it away, they find someone and pin it on them in the store. The guys corralling the carts, they make sure the wheels work. The whole culture of the store has changed. It can happen in a grocery store, in an office, in a neighborhood, and most importantly, in a home. What kind of atmosphere are you creating? I know it's easy to say, well, I talk this way and I do that because of them. They make me. And you got to own it before there can be any change of heart. And it can be difficult. But what if this week we made the choice? I want to bring an atmosphere. I want to set an atmosphere. When I go to a store when I am in my home, on the job, whatever encounters you're in, what if we decided to create an atmosphere of love, an atmosphere of joy, an atmosphere of encouragement? I'm just telling you, it's going to come back on you tenfold. There's a great payoff. You see, there's the power of death in our words, but more importantly, there's the power of life in our words. And as a fellow struggler, I encourage you, make a conscious effort in what you say and how you say it this week. Would you pray with me? Jesus, thank you for your patience with us. Thank you that in the middle of difficult at times, strained conversations, that you'll give us wisdom. You'll give us words of life. Help us, Lord, to be discerning of when to speak and when to be quiet. Help us to think and consider and pray for the Holy Spirit to fill us and to use us to create an atmosphere in ourselves, around the people we care about, and the world we live in. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.